The state's enterprise network that they're trying to put together is another example. Out in the rural parts of Oregon, there's a lot of consortiums that are working on the problem. In my community, we've been working on it for 6 years, and we've had some success out there. So I think we all understand the importance of it. What we feel at counties is we have all these different activities going on, and somehow we need to have some kind of a state coordination of those activities. A lot of these activities tend to be independent of one another, and you question how the investments are made and how they are coordinated. Senate Bill 765 is a bill that provides for a telecommunications council made up of the various interest groups, stakeholders throughout the state, including private, public sector, a wide array of interests. We included both the public and the private sector in this. And the bill is an attempt to take care of this coordination piece so that we have a plan statewide that looks at our limited investments, the money that we have for limited investments, not only from the public but from the private side. A lot of our investments tend to be siloed. They come down for specific purposes. We look at the money that came from 622 to schools. Well, how does that coordinate with other activities that are going out here? And this bill is an attempt to address some of those situations so that we can come to the legislature and the local governments and to all the other players with some concrete recommendations how to maximize our efforts as we roll out telecommunications in the state of Oregon. Again, the council's purpose is just is a coordination piece to make recommendations. It's a 21-member council. I know that we've been questioned about the size of the council, and we've held a series of stakeholder meetings, two of them in the last couple of months. And every time we would go to one of these stakeholder meetings, everyone else wanted to be on the council. So there's a lot of interest out there. No one wants to be left behind. But with that, I would call your attention to a letter from Commissioner Cindy Wheeldriver-Dreyer from Lane County. Cindy was unable to be here today. She did ask me to submit that letter into the record. Just briefly, I would like to take maybe just a little bit about the local experience in my community and how important telecommunications can be. This is an issue that we've worked for a number of years in our community, and we've had some success with telecommunications. Our community was able to attract ODS to come to our community to do a claims processing center, and one of the key pieces of that was to provide adequate telecommunications, and it's been very exciting for my community. It brings another leg to our economy that we didn't have before. High-tech piece, we were able to lever in the necessary infrastructure through negotiations with Touch America, but it's truly made a difference in our community. My consultant that works for the county tells me that Union County's price for a T1 line is similar to Boise, Idaho. We can get a T1 line in LeGrand faster than you can in Salem and Portland. It truly makes a difference. And I think an important part to understand about telecommunications and the importance is not only the direct economic benefit from companies that need it, but it's becoming a standard that all companies are demanding. It's just like sewer, water, or anything else. When a company looks at a community, one of the questions they're going to ask is, what telecommunications do you have available? So it's truly a very important issue for the state of Oregon, and I think we need to be very serious about it. I would point out to you that the Internet Commission identified in their findings the need for coordination. Now, they propose to do it a little different than we're proposing to do it, but it's not only counties that see this need. I think the need is truly there, and this is an attempt to address that need. And with that, I would ask Commissioner John Arns from Hood River County.
Thank you. My name is John Arns, Chair of Hood River County Commission. Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, thank you for this opportunity for allowing us to speak to you today. Senate Bill 765 is our attempt at trying to bring things to a focal point here at the state level so we can understand all of the different things that are going on. My experience last year working with telecommunications and a couple of the different state entities is they have the same problem. And I think that we recognize that problem is not only at the state level, it's at the county level. It's at the city level. It's at our rural community level as well as our metropolitan areas. So we all realize how important telecommunications is. I look at it as our biggest potential economic tool that we have in rural Oregon. A lot of the issues or a lot of the access issues have been addressed in the metropolitan areas, but there are a lot of areas in rural Oregon that still have no communication whatsoever. This type of a committee could help facilitate gathering information so that two companies aren't going down different sides of the road, so to speak, bringing infrastructure in where they could be collaborating and sharing that infrastructure, thus reducing the cost. And that's the benefit to the state. If there is a committee that's available and working together and that information is shared, then the cost savings go on to the state. They in turn come to the end user. And I think that's really the bottom line. I would refer to the draft of the bill, page 5, B, C, and D, as really outlining the true focal point of what the bill is offering. And I don't see it being adverse to the private sector. You may hear differently on that today, but this is an attempt to try and bring all of the information together at one point to help all of us provide better communications for the state of Oregon in the best possible manner that we can. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Commissioner.
Thank you.
Bill.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Bill Penhollow. I'm with the Association of Oregon Counties. Just a couple of comments. Commissioner Arnes referenced page 5 of the bill, and he was working off of a hand-engrossed copy that I have provided them that the committee doesn't have. But if you're looking at the original bill, it would be on page 3, section 6. It basically talks about the role of the Telecommunications Coordinating Council. Let me just add a couple of comments, and then we would certainly want to open ourselves up for questions if the committee members have questions that they would like to ask. This is a priority, as Commissioner McClure indicated, of the Association of Oregon Counties, that we, if I might paraphrase a statement from our president, that we not leave any community behind, that actually we focus on providing high-speed broadband telecommunications statewide. It's happening pretty much on its own in our urban areas up and down the Willamette Valley, but you don't go very far out of the Willamette Valley and you start encountering problems with insufficient telecommunications connectivity. We want to overcome that, much as we did in the last century with electrical power and telephone services, so that all of our communities benefit from this new technology and the advantages that it brings. So that's the focus of the legislation. As Commissioner McClure indicated, through our stakeholders process, the size of the council has grown in the bill as it was introduced from 15 members to 21 members because of the interest in having input and participation in the council. We're certainly open to discussing with the committee and others what is an appropriate size for this kind of a body, what is the most efficient size. As a matter of fact, we have a meeting, another stakeholders meeting this Tuesday at our local government center, and have invited all of the stakeholders to again come together and participate in this discussion. So let me stop there. I would be happy to take the committee through the bill and the dash 3 amendments that are before you, but I'll leave that to you and stop at that point and see if there are questions.
Okay, why don't we check with the committee. Committee members, any questions for any of the three individuals?
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Senator Nelson.
Seem to be in in the 95 session, didn't they create a telecommunication forum council through the governor's office that actually didn't work out very well? Is there similarities or differences between that concept and what you're trying to do?
Mr. Chair, Senator Nelson, I think we've had those discussions, and some of us participated. Cindy Wheeldryer participated on that council, and I think what we have attempted to do with this bill is to make it a more independent unit. It serves as a commission, so that it's not tied up tightly with any particular state agency, so that we can get beyond that and get into everybody a platform where everybody is equal. With equal consideration, both from the private side, the local government sides, and the other interests. So, yes, we think this bill would address some of those concerns.
Just to follow up, as I recall, the budget for that was $500,000 or something like that. Is it, are you anticipating hiring staff, or is that going to be a portion of this bill to bring some monies forth from the state?
Mr. Chair, Senator Nelson, we have received information that the cost would be somewhere in the neighborhood of $400,000 to $500,000 a biennium. As we have indicated in the testimony that we've provided you on the second page, there's some options there that I think provide us an alternative to bring the various interest groups together and provide support for council such as this. But I think that the state is going to have to be in the principal position of funding the position, and what we would envision would be probably two FTEs, an executive director, and a support staff. we have talked about bringing other resources to the table, but are balancing that need against the investments that are going to have to be made and incentivized out in the communities, and feel that much of the economic development resources that are available to counties and to regions are probably going to be needed to accomplish the gaps that we have, the middle mile gaps that we will have, and the last mile gaps. So it's going to have to be, everyone's going to have to be contributing. It's going to be just in different forms and different processes.
Mike, I'm just curious if you've had a chance to talk to any of the leadership within Ways and Means, and I ask that cautiously because, you know, we're a policy group here and we hate to have the Ways and Means drive us, but just I want to deal with the reality of right now it's conceivable you could send something to Ways and Means and you'll never hear of it again with the fiscal situation. So I don't know if you've had a chance to talk to Ways and Means leadership to see if there's some hope down there for it. The other thing I guess I would ask is, keeping that in mind with the fiscal constraints and the possibilities of something getting lost in Ways and Means, is there any alternate possibility of taking the existing council that we've talked about and revamping that? Because it's on the books and it's an established thing. You're not trying to get something new, and I don't know to what extent you might have explored those ideas and to talk to other people.
Mr. Chair, we've had all those discussions, and as Mr. Pinhall says, we're open to discussions with the committee. We certainly understand the fiscal constraints that we're under this time. I guess I would argue that I think this is a very important issue for the state of Oregon. I think it has some long-term implications, not only for rural Oregon, but for all of Oregon. But be that what it is, we still understand what's here. And I think that's probably the reason that we have the language in there of looking at other alternatives to finance it. We certainly are aware of the difficult situation that the legislature is going. We would be interested in talking about any other possibilities that meets the needs that we have here. We've advanced this. We think it's important that we do have some kind of independence with this group. I think part of the concerns with Connecting Oregon Communities Board is the very narrow focus that board has. You know, it was basically tied to 622, the possibility of expanding that focus and the membership. That's certainly something that would be worthy of a discussion. You also have the Internet Commission and some other things going on out there. We're advancing an idea for comment, and would certainly be willing to sit down and work with the committee in any fashion that, would meet the ends that we have. We do think it's important that, we do recognize the grassroots activity that has occurred on these activities throughout the state of Oregon, not only in my community, but all of eastern Oregon, on the coast and every place else, and we would like to see those efforts included in any process that we go into.
I look at your representative list, and if we were to go this route, this group might be better represented than the Senate is.
There's nobody representing people who live in cul-de-sacs.
We'll add that. Other questions from committee members for, our panel at this point? None right now, so stand by. We may want you again.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Bruce Shaw from Sprint has some comments for us. Oh, Brent, you going to come at the same time? Okay. And Brent Wolf from OTA. We'll be together.
Chairman Duncan, members of the committee, my name is Bruce Shaw. I work for Sprint, and I want to thank you for the opportunity to speak here today. Speaking in opposition to Senate Bill 765, which would establish the Oregon Telecommunications Coordinating Council. We oppose it because it attempts to develop strategies and control investments in telecommunications facilities and services that may prove uneconomically sound. As mentioned before, it was kind of just sort of thing that tried before with the OTFC, and I think the benefits of that exercise were unclear at best. And I think finally, as has been discussed a little bit earlier, it imposes a fairly costly bureaucracy with yet another layer of oversight and regulation on telecommunications companies. In developing strategy and controlling investment, Section 6, Paragraph 2 of the bill lists the primary duty of the council is to develop a comprehensive long-range plan for telecommunications service in Oregon. And it must make recommendations concerning capacity, utilization, and types of facilities, both public and private, the appropriate use of those existing telecommunication facilities and programs, the need for additional or different facilities and programs. And we think this is very detailed and centralized planning that really attempts to pick winners and losers, if you will, in current or emerging telecommunications technology, when it's very possible that investment in those technologies may prove uneconomic and saddle companies and taxpayers with a cost of stranded investment. I would submit to you that one of the best things that the state of Oregon has done to get broadband services deployed in Oregon is the state of Oregon telecommunications contract that was, I think, I'm not sure, about 5 years ago, when a consortium of Oregon's telephone companies went together and provided frame relay service to all of the locations where the lottery is in Oregon. Without that state contract, we would have not had frame relay deployed that fast in rural Oregon. I can tell you that right now. But because you have that anchor tenant, you are able to offer that service to others in your community that can take advantage of it. And as I understand it, that contract is up for renewal right now, and that, I think, has been a good driver. The Oregon Telecommunications Forum Council, mentioned before, a lot of the same goals, I think, were incorporated into that, and I think that was a fairly limited effort, and I think the governor recognized that the benefits were limited and basically wrote it out of his budget in 1997, as I remember. That's the way I remember it, but there may be other things going on there I didn't know about. And finally, the bureaucracy. The bill is now up to 21 folks with a $400,000 to $500,000 fiscal note, and it's a fairly expensive proposition. And for these reasons, I ask you that you not forward Senate Bill 765 for further action. Thank you.
Maybe I'll ask you a question. You just heard the testimony from the counties.
Yes,
and we're able to hear some of their concerns. How would you address those concerns that they have?
Well, I think certainly services roll out at different rates for different communities. For Sprint, we do not have DSL available at this time. We're hopeful to have that at some point when it proves it's economically feasible to do so. The state may give us an opportunity to do that with a contract that's currently under negotiation. We do have ISDN, which is a high-speed service. It's very affordable for customers at about 128K. We have frame relay service. We have T1 service in terms of broadband. But I think we get caught up in the fact that I call it the McDonald's syndrome, if you will. You know, you walk up and I want it now. And I think that's the sort of the philosophy that's taken over, is that because things are so quick and so fast now, the economics, so to speak, we don't care about that, give me the service now. The Oregon Economic Development Department, as part of 622, did a survey of, I believe this was fairly rural customers, but they were willing to pay about $2 a month extra for high-speed broadband service. Well, I don't think anybody's going to get the pricing down to that point where they can afford that level of service. There's a price point that has to be met for companies, especially in rural Oregon, where you have a limited number of customers to spread those costs over. So I'm hopeful we'll get there. It just may not be in the timetable that everybody is wanting right now.
Questions for...
Thank you. Good afternoon. My name is Brant Wolf, representing the Oregon Telecommunications Association. The OTA is also opposed to Senate Bill 765, which, if passed, would create a new government entity, the Telecommunications Coordinating Council. The main reason for our opposition to this is pretty simple. Currently, the industry here in Oregon operates under the regulatory authority of the OPUC, the FCC, the OUNC, and a couple of other Cs I'm probably leaving out. The mission of the TCC, while not regulatory in nature, would certainly require us to participate to some degree in their activities. With a limited amount of staff time that's available, certainly to the association, also to another degree of the companies, the small companies and the large companies, it's just difficult to participate in all these different activities that are required of us. As a result, that might lead to or the development of a telecommunications plan that was not able to take into account all the interests of all the parties involved. To keep it brief and to summarize, the OTA were opposed to the creation of this new entity that may to some degree also duplicate the efforts of other entities, such as the Eastern Oregon Telecommunications Consortium, which we referred to earlier in our testimony, and also the commissioners did as well. They're doing a good job, and we don't need to duplicate that effort. In short, the industry is treading water in a sea of seas, and the OTA has reservations about the need for another one. And for this reason, we ask that you not support Senate Bill 765. Thank you.
Clever writing.
I tried to break it up.
No, I was coming. Clever writing, I think.
Everyday type question here. You talked to the... counties about this bill?
Well, in fact, I have attended a couple of the AOC, the telecommunications summits, and I suppose I should admit some responsibility for the expansion from 15 to 21 members because in its original form, we were concerned about the lack of industry representation on the original council, and if it was going to go forward, we felt we needed to be on board. I think, yeah.
So let me understand this. You did talk to him about this bill, and you did talk to him about even coming in with the amendments to get you on in the bill?
Well, I would say that if the bill was going to move forward, we certainly wanted to be on board. We wanted to be able to participate. We didn't want to be left out if it was going to move forward, yes.
And Sprint, did you talk to the county about the dealings?
We did not have any discussions with the counties on this specific bill.
Do you think the counties knew you had some feelings about the bill? I don't know. You don't know?
I don't know.
They're sitting behind you looking at you. And,
yeah.
you know.
The heat on. I can feel it.
I know.
See if we get the same response in front and back. Huh?
I just find myself wondering, you know, it first came in, it looks like such a simple little idea, nice idea, sort of get-together type idea. And then you guys come in and really did a number on this bill. So I'm just curious if they knew about your feelings about the bill ahead of time. Apparently they didn't, or they did, or they knew that you wanted to be on it, but I guess they didn't know you really didn't want to be on it.
Senator Courtney, I announced our opposition to this bill at the AOC summit, yes.
Okay. That's all. I just wondered how far apart they were, whether they talked, whether there was any options here to get together. Of course, I know there's a little ways and means issues. So I just sort of exploring here, Mr. Chairman, with the parties.
Well, I was wondering if going from 15 to 16 was meant to help it or to go the other way.
I don't know if it would help or not, but again, if it was going to go forward, we wanted to be on board.
Just so you know, Mr. Chair, for what it's worth, I've been on, I think, 45 search committees. And many others, and I'll do what anybody wants to do in the bill, but I think when you get out this number of people on the committee, it's just unmanageable almost. Number one, you can't get a meeting with a quorum. You can't get a meeting where everybody can get to, but that's fine. I mean, they want to do it, you can do it. I mean, it looks great, and everybody does this kind of thing, but the truth of the matter is, so it's humanly impossible, in my opinion, to have a meaningful type of thing like this. We just served Senator Metzger, and I was thinking about, where's the Internet Commission? Does that relate to this thing? You remember how we finally decided we'd only meet in one place, and how was that? There wasn't that many people compared to this, was it?
We ended up doing a lot of our meetings, you know, on the phone in order to
make sure we
had a quorum.
We always met the trace, but how many people were on it? Did you allow this dialogue?
No, I think this. I kind of like.
I believe we had. I think we had 13 members on. 11 yeah. members. 11 members. 11 members.
From all over the world, type mm-hmm. of thing.
Yeah,
and we just.
Senator Atkinson, Roger, do you want to get in on this too, anyway?
I would. Can we have someone from AOC come up again?
Yes.
I have a question about.
Want to have them? You want these two to stay?
They can stay. I mean, I don't care. I am just very curious. I want to follow up on something Senator Courtney said. In terms of as you put this bill together, did you contact the wireless companies and other telecommunications companies and about asking to help you with this and what their response was? I mean, apparently, I was curious as to whether this is the first they've decided to take an interest in this or whether you've tried to work with them on it.
Mr. Chair, Senator Metzger, yes, we invited everybody to these meetings that we had, everybody that we could think of. We took input from everybody. We tried to satisfy as many concerns that came forward. We heard the concerns about the small telcos. We provided a spot at the table for them. And that's the reason the number got to 21. We were trying to bring everybody into this thing as we go forward.
What type of response did you get? I mean, did they participate? Did they come and say, do you would like to be participating in this? Or?
Yes, we had good response, okay. From everybody. There has been some concerns expressed, like there is a lot of bills, but we tried to address those. And we're still in the discussion stage. I mean, if there are some concerns here and there's some ways that we can make this thing work better, we're certainly willing to take a look at those things. I would like to just respond to one thing, and that talks about the local government's view of this. If you base this strictly on a business case, you are never going to drive this infrastructure into places like Spray and Fossil. This is beyond that. This has to be viewed as a basic infrastructure like electricity, sewer, and water. And to do that, you're going to have some coordination, and you're going to have some ways to do it. It has to be viewed like rural electrification. I certainly respect the for-profit companies. I understand where they come from. They have a loyalty to their shareholders, and they should have that loyalty. But myself, as a local elected official, there are some other interests in this besides just that. And if we don't provide this kind of infrastructure out there, you're going to see communities are going to fall further and further and further behind. It was very interesting as we went through it in LeGrand, asked the question of what we needed. No one knew what we needed. We found out what we needed. What we needed was what the companies that were going to locate in our community demanded. And believe me, that standard goes up every day. Now, it might appear to be bells and whistles, but if they can get it in Los Angeles or San Francisco or any place else, before they will seriously consider your community, they're going to expect that you have telecommunications that meets their needs. And every month, that demand, that requirement continues to go up. And if we don't make an attempt to address that in some kind of a meaningful fashion as an infrastructure so that it's available, it's going to become economically more difficult for us in rural Oregon.
Okay, if I can sense a feeling, and correct me if I'm wrong, I would guess there is some interest in moving forward with some sort of a coordinating kind of a concern. That's what I'm sensing from committees and I think Senator Nelson and so forth too. I also sense that the number 21 seems to be unmanageable, costly. We might even be embarrassed to send it to Ways and Means with that number in it. I think that might be the kiss of death for sure. It would seem to me that you've talked to a lot of people, but we're not sure these people have been working with you. I'm wondering if we might say, you folks go back to the drawing board, try to come up with something that's a bit more manageable, that meets the need, and if you don't do it, we may do it, and you're better off probably doing it yourself than trying to have us do something. Committee members, any response from you on that, any other guidance we might give them?
I think you're right, unless they've got some kind of already game plan here in Ways and Means. We just send this off to Ways and Means, it's gone. But unless you got Senator Nelson in the committee, maybe they've got a deal going or something, I don't know. But I'm just telling you that $400,000 I heard.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I heard, to be honest.
Yeah, between.
You know, that's why I read all of it. I'm sure you know that. I mean, you had this opposition thing, too. And I don't know how. I don't think Ways and Means wants to get into resolving those kinds of opposition things at this stage of the game, Mr. Chair. Maybe I'm wrong.
I think
that we can get them together. Some of you gentlemen won't do that. I don't know if Senator Hutchinson is on this. I can't meet Senator Metzger or even you, Senator Duncan. Well, I just read you, Senator Duncan. You're giving me a signal.
Yep.
Well, I agree, Mr. Chair. I think if there's a, I think the best thing we could do for you is see if you can come up with something that has a narrow focus in which there's more support for it. Otherwise, we can be polite to you and send it, but it's not going to be going anywhere. I mean, that's the honest response, I think.
And there may be those of you who would like to have that happen. I mean, I recognize that, too. Yeah. But I guess if that's kind of
Mr.
Like
Chair, that, we would be, yeah, we would like to do that.
And I guess I'd like to pursue one other thing. You asked the question about the wireless.
Well, I just asking in general, how many people were wireless and the other carriers who actually helped participate? But he responded that they did respond and were interested in.
Okay, but they could also know about the, as you go back to the drawing, excuse me, losing my voice here, going back to the drawing board now, if you'd involve.
Yes, we would be glad to do that, Mr. Chair.
Okay, good luck to you. And we will keep in touch with Marjorie. And we're on a very tight timeline, as you know. Committees will be closing down before long, so.
Thank you, sir.
You want to have April 20th. So we need something back from you right away. Thank you very much. Any other questions? Closing the public hearing on Senate Bill 765. And opening public hearing on House Bill 2727. And Tom, I believe you're the first one up.
Oh, there we go.
Tom Lindstrom, who is with the Beaver Creek Telephone Company. Welcome to the committee. You going to join him, Brent? Okay.
Different chair this time.
Will that be easier, do you think?
Sure.
That chair going to be easier?
Well, I don't know about that.
Good afternoon.
Mm-hmm. Chairman Duncan, members of the committee, for the record, again, my name is Brant Wolf, representing the Oregon Telecommunications Association. I am here on this particular bill. My role is simply one of support. The OTA, of which Beaver Creek Cooperative is a member, supports Beaver Creek's efforts in House Bill 2727, and that's going to be the extent of my testimony today, unless there are questions from the committee, but I prefer to wait until Mr. Lindstrom has accomplished his testimony.
Chairman Duncan and the rest of the committee, thank you for allowing me to be here today. As most of you, I've talked with most of you already, my name is Tom Lindstrom, and I'm the CEO president of Beaver Creek Cooperative Telephone Company. Beaver Creek is a co-op. It's basically been around since 1904. It's an area that nobody else really wanted to serve, so the members, owners of our cooperative started the phone company, and hopefully here in the next 2 years we'll be celebrating our 100th anniversary. Currently we represent about 4,800 customers in telephone, 2,700 customers in cable TV, as well as 1,000 internet or DSL customers. We roughly serve about 62 square miles of our rural community outside of the Portland metropolitan area. The main purpose of House Bill 2727, as it was introduced into the House, was to clarify the lines between the Commission's authority as well as the Board of Directors, which are elected by our members. And part of the reason is because of the issues that have been being brought forward over the years since 1985 under House Bill 2200 and 1987 under House Bill 2655, where we as co-ops thought that our Board of Directors, and we still do believe that our Board of Directors today have the authority when it deals with member issues, direct with the members, if it's local rates or EAS rates or whatnot, that they have the ability to resolve those issues. Over the years, the PUC has been providing to the 11 co-ops here in Oregon statements regarding how the statutes apply to co-ops, as they have adopted their administrative rules. They have repeatedly tried to include cooperatives into these rules that basically do not apply. And we believe that because over the years the legislature has adopted Oregon Revised Statutes Title 62, which I happen to give you a copy in our testimony today. As you can see, there's quite a few statutes there that talks about how a co-op works and the running of the co-op. This bill basically was designed to restore the balance between the co-ops and the commission. This bill does continue to recognize the commission's ability to be involved in services that cooperatives provide long-distance carriers. This bill does not change the commission's ability to regulate access charges that a co-op charges inter-exchange carriers. This bill does not affect the commission's ability to establish new EAS routes. However, what it does mean is that cooperatives determines the terms and conditions and classifications and rates the co-op charges to its members for EAS service. The commission will not be involved in the relationship between the co-op and its members or owners. And many times over the years, Commissioner Smith, Commissioner Ekus, Commissioner Hamilton has made it very clear that they do not want to be involved with setting rates, that it is up to our board. But sometimes, you know, there's a link there, and you know, they try to get into that, and it does cause us problems. The cooperatives today, the 11 cooperatives today, we currently, you know, the members elect the board of directors. That, you know, that means the cooperative is member managed. They don't like rates. They don't like how we're doing business or what services we do not provide. They make sure we offer those services. I'm here to, you know, ask the senators today, and I'm not here to say anything about any other telephone company, but I would really like to say, you know, with current technology, you know, the buzzwords out there today are cable modems, DSL services, high speed. I'd like you to ask yourself, you don't need to respond to me because I'm here responding to you for this House bill, is can you get DSL services to your home? Can you get DSL services or high-speed internet services? In Beaver Creek Telephone, every home has DSL services. We serve 62 square miles. We have high-speed internet. We were just in meetings today talking about establishing nationwide internet services with other small companies and co-ops. You know, we believe that the co-ops are on a cutting edge. And, you know, it's the members that push us towards that cutting edge. You know, it's the directions and stuff that they want to see. One of the things, and I realize there's four amendments that are being brought to you today, and the amendments, excuse me, as part of my testimony that I handed out to you, we took the liberty of taking the House Bill amendments and actually inserting the amendments under the existing House Bill 2727 law, which was or the rule, or proposed law that was adopted by the House of each one of the people that submitted amendments. And in Amendment 1, we have overall Amendment 1 is not a bad amendment. We could support it. There's two words in that amendment. And in line 8, section 1, where it states, allows the Public Utilities Commission to establish or regulate access charges imposed by unincorporated associations or cooperatives. We believe the word established or is incorrect.
Tom, could I do something just for a second?
Yes.
Before we start on the amendments, the sponsor of the bill is here and may have to go back to another committee meeting. I'm just wondering if we could ask Representative Schrader if he would come up.
You
and
bet.
Then we'll start on the amendments, okay?
Okay?
I think it's a good breaking point to do that. Representative, it's certainly nice to have you with us this afternoon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate the opportunity to be here, members of the committee. I'm Representative Kurt Schrader, House District 23. I appreciate the opportunity. Sorry to interrupt the testimony here. I'd like to speak in favor of House Bill 2727. It's actually a fairly straightforward bill. There's been a lot of controversy with the PUC and some of the cooperative telephone associations over the years about where does one's jurisdiction begin and where does one's end. And rather than go through more debate, deliberation, more jurisdictional disputes and having court decisions, et cetera, I thought it might be appropriate to bring this controversy to an end by a simple definitional bill. And my understanding, certainly in light of some of the amendments have been offered by the, as I understand, by the PUC and some others that were pretty close with House Bill 2727. Basically what we're talking about is where does the PUC's authority end with regard to cooperative telephone associations? Are they different than telecommunications utilities? And the answer is yes. And in the statutes, they're defined differently. There's a whole section on cooperatives, and there's a whole section on telecommunications. And there is some need for the PUC to regulate intrastate access charges, and I feel that's appropriate. I think there seems to be no real controversy over this. So what we're trying to do with this bill is establish the fact that there is a difference, that certain set of statutes should predominate when you're talking about cooperatives. Another set of statutes should deal with the telecommunications utilities, and that's in the base bill of 2727. I would like to speak quickly to the amendments, if I may, and that is that I think there seems to be fairly good agreement. You'll get some difference of opinion, I'm sure, from people out here that we're close. And I would suggest that both amendment, the dash ones and the dash threes are the ones that really finally clarify where we need to be. The dash threes would be what I would prefer, but I would also be okay with the dash ones. And that really clearly defines where I think we need to be in this controversy, quite frankly.
Okay,
thank you. Questions for Representative Schrader? Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you very much,
appreciate
Mr. Chair.
Appreciate being with us, okay? Mm-hmm. Tom, we'll move back to you then with on the amendments.
Thank you, Chairman Duncan and the committee. As I was stating on House Bill 2727, Amendment 1, there's only two words in there that I personally don't have a problem with, but some of the long-distance carriers might, and I'm not sure if it's appropriate or not, because to my understanding, as was pointed out by OTA's attorney to me this morning, that the FCC establishes how access charges are put together through rules with Part 36, Part 69, and under state statute today, as well as administrative rules, the commission adopts those practices. And to use the word establish might cause longer or possible harm. and we recommend in amendment number one that if you would remove establish or, and it would read how the Public Utility Commission allows the Public Utility Commission to regulate access charges imposed by unincorporated associations and or cooperatives. But again,
why don't you read that once again?
It's on line 8, on House Bill 27-1.
Well, we're working with the dash 1, right?
Right, dash 1.
Okay, that would be on line 2.
Right. And under line 2, allows the Public Utility Commission to establish or regulate
right.
access charges imposed by unincorporated associations and cooperative corporations. And what we're saying is establish or is not appropriate in this language.
Right.
Okay. And we Beaver Creek Telephone can live with that if you leave it in. But I'm just saying I'm not sure if
right.
from the long distance carriers.
I missed what you the change you were recommending.
Right. That we remove established or.
Established or. Oh, just a step. Or
remove two words.
Two.
Established
oh,
or.
I thought you had some other words. That I thought.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because we currently have laws that we follow under the FCC that sets how access rates are developed. So.
Okay.
Under amendment number 2, we do not support that at all, and I think that was an attempt at the Legislative Council to interpret what the Commission wanted, and there's many problems with that one. So, under House Bill 2727, amendment 3, we have come to an agreement with the Commission. And we have they brought 3 issues to this bill, and the committee members here asked me to sit down with the commission and ask them if we could come to agreements, and we came to agreements with 2 out of the 3 amendments that they are opposing. The last amendment that in their agreement that they wanted was to bring something into statute that we feel is punitive. It's a one-time shot. We currently have
which one is that? Which amendment is that?
That's amendment number 4.
Okay, so excuse me. Yes. Go back to 3. You concur with 3.
I concur with 3. We totally support 3.
Okay. And that
and
was the PUC amendment, wasn't it?
And the PUC amendment number 4,
that was
section 2,
okay,
is the one we do not support. We believe that is punitive. We believe that since there's a court case in Clackamas County, this has to do with what rates we charged our members. And, you know, our board established these rates. You know, there's a number of legal issues that I feel that a court needs to resolve. I don't believe it should be in front of this committee. If the commission wants their day in court, just like Beaver Creek, we want a level playing field and let a judge decide that. We don't need it in law. And the other biggest concern that we have is at some point in time, someone's going to have to come back and remove that from law. You know, so we asked the committee not to adopt Section 2. I handed you out, just to give you an example, you know, of a co-op, I handed you out 2 documents that we have not given out here on the table because it has proprietary information about co-ops. And the document that's stapled together gives you a 5-year history, for example, of what local revenues were with the co-op, what EAS revenues gives you a total revenues, gives you what we call a Paytings dividend, and what the basically that's the total earnings of the company and how it's allocated back. And as you can see that our members in Beaver Creek over the last 5 years have basically paid no local rates or EAS rates whatsoever. And then the second document basically it goes back to 1968 that basically shows you through 1999 we have given back over $9 million to our members in total earnings. So,
Tom,
I do have these documents.
Tom, you realize you just put that on the public record.
I realize it's on.
Okay.
I do not have a problem of giving this out here. You like, I have copies for here. I have no problem. But it kind of gives you know, some of the heart and blood of a co-op.
Okay.
But I thought it was important for this committee to know that we do not make money. We reduce our rates to our members.
Okay.
You know, and that's the purpose of a co-op, is to go out and establish services that they want and bring it forward.
Okay, questions for Tom or for Brent?
I've got one.
Yes.
Tom, I'm confused.
on the Dash 4 amendment, you say you want to delete Section 2. You were talking about these things should not be, certain things should not be done by this committee. They should be done before the court. But doesn't Section 2 continue your court dispute? I mean, isn't that exactly what that does, is to say, yes, the court will decide on those prior issues?
Chairman Duncan and Senator Metzger, not really. We looked at that. We believe that when you put something like that in the law, a judge who may not be familiar with how telecommunications law works sometimes will refer to the Public Utility Commission, and we believe, and we have brought this forward to staff over the last couple of weeks, that we believe any reference in the law about that might tend to unlevel the playing field, that the judge might say, well, maybe the commission did have jurisdiction. And, you know, we offered to come up with a proposed agreement between Beaver Creek and the commission that basically states that if this bill is adopted and signed into law, that the commission as well as Beaver Creek will maintain that level playing field and move forward, and they rejected that offer. You know, basically it's saying the same thing, but it's given a memorandum of understanding, which will be a legal document that basically says that neither of us will speak about this bill in front of the judge, and the judge is going to be hearing this case in July. To my understanding, it was July, court date is July 14th, and we're in the process of putting together, I guess, testimony and whatnot for this court case. And we're quite concerned about that, Senator Metzger, that we want to make sure we get a level playing field when we go into court.
I'm not an attorney, Tom, as you know. And we'll hear from, I see someone from the PUC here, so I imagine we'll be hearing from them. But my only thought on that, Mr. Chair, is going back to last session in Senate Bill 622, we dealt with a very similar issue in committee on this regarding the ongoing rate case between U.S. West at that time. And the court, and the end result was we left that in of the ongoing court case, not to interfere with that ongoing court case.
Correct.
And there was not a that was a very complex issue, Tom, I guess, as you know. But the argument that it was prejudice to court was not one that was sustained in that discussion based on that language. That's why I'm just curious. I'm not an attorney to see if this is somewhat different, and we'll see what someone else says. But I understand now where you're coming from on it, but I just say there's some question there because we've dealt with a similar issue before for prior issues, you know. Yes. So,
Chairman Duncan, I'd like to address that for a minute, and Senator Metzger, is in the prior court case with Senate Bill 622, that was eventually negotiated between West. Yes,
it was. But yes. But one might argue that because of the fact that we left that language in is why it was negotiated.
And the other issue is that we were talking millions of dollars. In this case, we're talking less than $50,000. And again, as I've shown you by this statement, and we were talking about part of the year of 99 and part of the year of 2000. Well, as you can see by this statement here, and this is very well documented, that we have returned in the neighborhood of $4.8 million to our members in the last 5 years. It far covers that $50,000 in rates. We believe that it's really a moot point. And I sat down with Phil Nygaard and Cynthia and went over how a co-op allocates, and under discussion with Phil Nygaard this morning, he basically said, yeah, we see what you do, and we agree you do allocate your money back 100%. We believe it's a moot point, but we're willing to go to court. We just don't think it should be part of the law to do that. The judge is going to hear it. And when you're a co-op and you're 100% get everything back and you're member-owned, and you're talking basically, out of 5,000 telephone customers, you're talking about less than 2.5% of the total customers. And part of this discussion that I had with Mr. Nygaard and Cynthia Van Landijk with the public utility staff, we took the year 1999, and out of the 200 customers that this might affect, all but 12 of them received far more return on their investment or patrons given back, but 12. Well, in the year 2000, our earnings, because we made some investment many years ago and they paid off, are going to see 4.62 times more of a return than before. So I'm venturing to say that in the year 2000, 100% of those 200 customers probably receive two or three times greater than the surcharge that's in dispute. You know, and we honestly believe the judge is going to see that and throw it out of court anyway.
Okay, let's not try to deal with the...
Okay, thanks.
Are there any other questions for them? Okay, thank you very much. Joan and Phil from the PUC. Good afternoon. Welcome to the committee.
Good afternoon, Senator Duncan and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Joan Smith, and I am one of the members of the Oregon Public Utility Commission. With me today is the acting director of our Utility Services Division and manager of telecom, Phil Nygaard. My testimony is fairly brief, and let me just make a couple of remarks before I start in, and I'll summarize it as I go. We agree 100% with Tom that co-ops are on the cutting edge. They're much more nimble than other kinds of phone companies in getting advanced services to their members because they're very close to their members. And they are different. There's no doubt about it. I couldn't agree more with Representative Schrader that the need for this bill is definitional, because when it comes to our disputes, we get into the definitions and things tend to go downhill from there. And I would also agree with Mr. Lindstrom that I think we're very close here. But the Commission is opposed to House Bill 2727 as it passed the House. It pertains to oversight over cooperatives, and I want to assure you today that the Commission has no interest in changing the status quo, which is a matter of very limited oversight over co-ops. And even though it was just said that the Commission likes to get into the co-ops business, I think on the record, should you wish to examine it, and it would really be boring, you'll find that is just not the case. The Commission's oversight is limited to situations where the actions of the cooperative affect parties that are not cooperative members. That's it. We have no interest in internal operations or any other thing that cooperatives do. But passage of this version of House Bill 2727 would produce a change in current law, not a clarification. On August 4, 1999, the Oregon Court of Appeals issued a decision in Beaver Creek Cooperative Telephone Company versus the PUC, which made it very clear that the Commission has oversight over the terms and conditions of something we call through services. And as you know by now, the jargon in telecommunications never stops. A through service is an intrastate, an in-state telecommunications service that involves the facilities, equipment, or services of two or more telecommunications utilities or cooperatives. For example, as we've already discussed, toll or access, long-distance service, and extended area service are the two main things that we worry about. Extended area service is a service that replaces long-distance service with a flat rate. In other words, you pay a flat rate on your bill or another kind of rate, and you get to call your neighboring exchanges without a long-distance charge. Commission oversight over the through services of cooperatives is necessary because these are the kinds of services that affect parties that are not cooperative members. For example, long-distance companies pay charges to cooperatives for the use of their facilities, and these are known as access charges. And it is correct to say that the form or the method by which we establish access charges, basically dictated by the FCC, but the state itself sets the level of access charges. In the case of EAS, establishment of new EAS routes involving cooperatives normally involves regulated companies and their customers as well. What we fear from House Bill 2727 is that it apparently seeks to eliminate, and that's where we need clarity, eliminate part of the Commission's limited oversight over cooperatives' EAS rates, terms, and conditions. The bill's ambiguity creates confusion. Our reading of the bill and that of our attorneys suggests that if House Bill 2727 becomes law, the Commission would no longer have the clear ability to establish new EAS routes with fair rates to obtain information from cooperatives needed to establish such routes and to enforce agreements between cooperatives and private telecommunications companies pertaining to EAS and EAS only. The Commission has offered three amendments to the bill known as Dash 4 amendments, and they should be available to you, I believe. If these amendments are adopted, that would, certainly alter our view of the bill. Of course, the Commission thinks that no bill at all would be preferable, but adoption of the three amendments would lead the Commission to take no position regarding the bill. General descriptions of the amendments and their purposes follow. The language in Dash 4 on lines 6 and 7 make clear that the Commission retains full authority over access charges. The language on lines 8
and 10... May I ask a question?
Sure.
The question Tom raised about established, did that... Do you have any response to that concern? It was in the Dash 1, but it also...
Yeah, I listened to that, and not being a legislative drafter myself, it doesn't seem to me that there'd be a huge difference between taking that out or leaving it in.
Okay.
Because we still regulate in-state access rates.
So you could
rates.
Take it out, and the regulation would do it, okay?
Whatever.
All right.
I'm sorry. The language in 8 through 10, lines 8 through 10, makes it clear that the Commission has the authority to obtain information essential to the establishment of new EAS routes. Without the information relating to calling patterns and financial impacts, the Commission could not establish new routes.
Now wait, was this originally the part of the Dash? Is that part of Dash?
There's a similar language in Dash 3.
Oh, I have that. I'm dealing with that. But originally, Dash 4, you picked up from the first three.
And I think by and large, although I certainly don't want to put words into Mr. Lindstrom's mouth, that items 3 and 4 on the Dash 4, lines 6 through 10, are more or less agreeable to the to Mr. Lindstrom.
Okay.
The big issue, though, is in some ways is the last part, Section 2, and I'm going to ask Phil in a moment to discuss what Section 2 means. But those the language on lines 11 through 16, makes it clear that the legislature takes no position regarding the pending lawsuit in Clackamas County Circuit Court. The lawsuit was filed by Beaver Creek Cooperative Telephone Company after the Commission issued a cease and desist order against Beaver Creek. The Commission issued its order after it learned Beaver Creek was charging customers EAS rates that had not been approved by the Commission in clear violation of the law. Beaver Creek appears to be violating one or more Commission EAS policies, policies that were established in a proceeding that was an open proceeding, a contested proceeding that considered the views of the industry and telecommunications customers. In particular, Beaver Creek apparently is or has been violating the policy that all EAS customers must have a flat rate option. Several Beaver Creek members complained to the Commission about the lack of a flat rate.
I guess that's the question that's in the court right
now.
Yeah,
that's what's in the court.
I don't think we want to stay clear of that. Now, let me ask this question.
Sure.
And by the way, I'm going to lose a vote here in a few minutes, so I'm trying to move a bit rapidly.
Absolutely.
Tom's concern was in Section 2, since this is pending in the courts, we shouldn't get involved. Now, I'm trying to read that, and I don't think we want to get involved in the court deal. How does this particular section get involved with the court deal?
Mr. Chairman, that was our intent, is to make sure that it's clear that the legislature does not want to get involved in the court case.
Well,
ask Phil to elaborate, if you will.
Why do we need to say that?
Chair Duncan, members of the committee, the reason that the commission would like to have that language is so that Beaver Creek can't go to court and make an argument that because if this law passes, because the law passes, the legislature is signaling their view of this lawsuit. The language is intended to be neutral. Senator Metzger has a very good memory that it's very similar to language that was part of SB 622. There was a case in court at the time the bill passed. Mr. Lindstrom was correct. It's since been settled, but basically the legislature said, let's just let this case continue.
Well, let me ask this question, Senator Metzger, too. If we don't deal with that, and it's very clear on the record here right now, and you can use that, we don't want to get involved in the court case, and we're not trying to send any signal to the court, right?
Mr. Chair, could Tom come back up to join you up here? I have a question about this.
Okay.
Maybe we can hash this out, maybe we can, but I've got a suggestion on it. But I want to hear what Tom has to say. Tom, I'm looking at the dash four. Maybe we all could look at the dash four here. On line six, first of all, you asked about eliminating the words establish or, okay? And the PUC seems like they might be willing to do that. So let's say that we did that. But then on section two, the amendment that you would like to have struck because you don't want to prejudice the court and then we have a dispute, you know, among you as to what that means. What if we added to the end of line 16? How would the two of you feel if we added the words ending with associations or cooperative corporations, and the legislative body takes no position on the merits of such actions or proceedings? Would that satisfy you? And to clarify that, and would that be amenable to the PUC?
Absolutely.
I don't have a problem. And then would that dash four then be an acceptable amendment to the bill so that we could move forward with it?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, acceptable to us. Although you may want to make sure that that's legislatively lawyerly correct. Or
well, we got a lawyer right here who's waving his hand.
Oh, the lawyer
is
speaking.
Yes, I don't think you want to put language like that. We should bring the legislative council up here to make a statement as to that we're doing exactly what I think we all want to do here, which means stay out of this legal fight. Let this suit do whatever's going to happen. This suit is going to happen to this suit. It's between those parties. I don't think you want to. You just. I'm not trying to. It's not the kind of language you want in law. I mean, that's all I'm going to say. So I understand. I compliment the senator from Washington, what he wants to do, but I don't think you need to do that. So I think there's apparently, if I think, Mr. Chair, can I ask?
Yes, go right ahead.
You're not comfortable with the language. Is that correct?
Correct, Chairman Duncan and the committee.
Because?
Because our attorney is advising us that we are definitely afraid that if the judge who's going to hear this reads this law that's come through and states that it might sway the judge or the attorney who will argue this for the AG's office, that the legislature felt that the commission had jurisdiction over EAS rates, and we think that's the true part of it that we think the judge needs to decide on.
It had no jurisdiction. I don't. Well, your attorneys aren't here. I don't know how to respond.
Let me try something right now with all of you right up here. Timing is becoming crucial at this stage of the game. Instead of let's go back to the House, so we have another leg on it. I would be inclined, and my committee give me direction here too. I'd be inclined if you want to get move it out today. I would move it. I'd go with the dash one. Okay, Senator.
Let me ask a question. This could be shocking. This is going to blow this place up.
No, we.
You're the earthquake man. Let me just ask this question. I'm not trying to be a smart aleck lawyer. Let me read something to you, everybody. The amendments to blah 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 section do not apply to any action or proceeding commenced before the effective date of this Act, 2001 Act. Period. That's all. No more words. That's it. What about that, parties?
Absolutely.
What about that, Tom?
Absolutely.
How about that? Does that do it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I'm not trying to play games with anybody here because it seems to me that it, boom.
In dash four, right?
You understand what I'm saying?
Right. So delete after the word act on line 13?
Yeah. Right? After the word act on line 13 of the dash 4 amendments, act, you put a period, and everything else, starting with the word if and ending with the word corporations, is deleted. Help me.
Yes.
I'm not trying to set anybody up. Trying to play anybody.
Is it, nope. Again, after the words 2001 act, period?
Period.
Period.
After the effective date of this 2001 act, period. Period.
And then end it there, right?
Come on.
No.
No, I just asked her to get somebody from LC up.
The council's coming up.
That's the council's on its way.
But that's, was that
Mr.
good time?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, on its face, that sounds perfect.
So we're making progress there.
I think so. If you've all agreed to that, the problem we will have, let's see, we're not meeting.
It would be the 20th of April.
It would be the 20th of April. Okay, we still have
time. We should be able to do a concession amendment for this, and if we have to wait the 20th.
What'd you say?
No one else is here, but I mean.
No.
What did you say, Senator?
Nothing. I was just talking to your staff.
Oh, you're very nice.
I don't meet every day like other people.
No problem.
Let's
judiciary.
We may ask Legislative Council. See what they think.
We're on our way.
Yeah, Legislative Council is on its way. Wait, Ginny. Ginny, you wanted to testify. Why don't you dash up here right quick, like? And Ginny, I'd like to have you respond that cooperatives do a better job than the big corporations. Is that, did I see you nodding your head back there?
Mr. Chairman,
I was watching you.
Okay. My name is Ginny Lang. If I was nodding, it was certainly inadvertent.
You were falling asleep. Okay.
This will be very brief. We would like to support the amendments brought by the commission. We have the same concerns about the language on EAS and access charges. And are a little concerned about the broadness of the language on those two issues. So I'm just here to support the dash fours.
Okay, thank you very much. Jenny, did you identify yourself for the record?
I think I did. Jenny Lang, representing Quest.
Okay, thank you. Okay. Got to check the holes. You know, okay, this may be fast. I'm going to recess on 2727 and open a public work session on House Bill 2040. And we have nobody to testify. Minister, do you want to brief us?
Chair Duncan, members of the committee, House Bill 2040, you had a public hearing on this on March 9th. It's coming to you from the House side, obviously, and basically it's a quick fix, and I understand that the chair on the House side is very interested in this bill.
We move it, Mr. Chair.
Well, sorry.
Senator Courtney moves
House Bill 2040 to the Senate floor to pass recommendations. Is that right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Senator Courtney moves House Bill 2040 to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Is there in House Bill 2040 that we did before?
What are we doing, Mr. Chair? Oh, yes, okay.
Okay. Hearing no objection, House Bill 2040 will be sent to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Carrier?
Well, let me carry it.
Senator Courtney will be the carrier.
Tower 1-2.
Okay. Did we see anybody out in the hall?
No, they're still coming.
Senate Bill 400. Anybody want to testify on? Okay. Pardon? I'm going to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 400, and Tracy Loudon from the Climate Department and Brad Suno. Oh, hello from the state courts. How you doing?
Thanks, Brad Swank.
Yes, Brad Swank. Yes, I just didn't look at it right.
That's all right. I agree. No, you're all right, buddy.
A challenge. If I looked back there and seen him, it'd be a different story. Would you proceed?
So I started for you. Good afternoon, Chair Duncan, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Tracy Loudon. I'm manager of fiscal and performance at the Employment Department.
During public testimony on Senate Bill 400, an issue was raised by Brad Swank of the Judicial Department. Testimony revealed that it was unclear in certain circumstances who the custodian of the information was in the shared information system. The question arises because the data is submitted by multiple state agencies or organizations. The committee directed the department to seek the advice of the Attorney General and return to the committee with an appropriate amendment if necessary. Based upon the advice of the Attorney General and in consultation with Brad Swank of the Judicial Department, the Governor's Office, and partner agencies, the department has proposed amendment language which addresses the issue of the custodian of information. If in the proposed amendment, the custodian of the information is identified as a state agency or organization sending or receiving the information. However, if the state agency or organization is not a public body, the custodian will be the Employment Department. Thank you for your careful consideration of this amendment.
Okay, questions?
Chair Swank, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Brad Swank. I'm with the State Court Administrator's Office. We were happy to be able to be of assistance in identifying an issue that might have otherwise become a legal issue that they might have been involved in. When I initially spotted this in the bill and we talked to the Employment Division, we thought that it might lead to some global solution, because the issue is an issue for a lot of agencies that start sharing databases with other agencies. It became clear very soon after I started discussing it with the Employment Division that this was not an appropriate bill to work on a global solution, and they've tailored a solution that's appropriate to the database that they're sharing. I raised the issue initially to make the committee aware that any time an agency or a part of government shares information in a database, there are public records issues that arise that are not covered necessarily by the public records law. And it's an issue for you to be aware of and to consider. I think they've solved their problem. We don't have any problem with the -1 amendments, but I may be back on some other bill if we either come up with a more global solution, because it's an issue that we run into sometimes when people approach us and want to share data. Who becomes the public custodian of some of the newly generated information? So in terms of Senate Bill 400, I'm glad we were able to help. It's probably an issue you should be aware of, and it's sort of out there in the ether at this point. And if I can answer any questions, I will.
Any questions for either of the... Okay.
I move the -1 amendments to Senate Bill 400.
Senator Courtney moves the -1 amendments to Senate Bill 400. Any discussion? Any objections?
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 400 as amended to the Senate floor, the due pass recommendation.
Senator Courtney moves Senate Bill 400 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any objection?
So ordered.
Okay. Oh, just to keep busy, I'm going to carry it. All right. I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 400. Reopen the public hearing on 2727. Mr. Harrison. Harrison. I started saying Mr. Harrison. But Harrison, would you just... Join us, Mr. Conley.
Conley, yes.
Nice to have you with us.
Thank you. This is Tim Murphy. He's a staff attorney in our office, and I was concerned that he might actually have more information about this one than I do.
What all the power?
No longer concerned.
Thank you. Have you been following it, so you know what the questions we're trying to deal with right now are?
I'm afraid that we weren't following it. We did talk a bit with Senator Metzger.
We expect you to be sitting right at the monitors watching every move we make all the time, because it's so exciting.
And I'm afraid that I failed in my duty on this day.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay. Senator Courtney, why don't you explain what you're trying to do with your recommendation, Senator?
Yes, me?
Yes.
Learned High Counsel, if I could direct you, please, to the -4 amendments. Do you have the -4 amendments in front of you?
Ooh, yes, sir.
What both parties want to do is to make sure that the lawsuit is now pending is not affected by this bill or any of the amendments. And there was concern by one of the parties, particularly the Beaver Creek Cooperative, that some of the language in the amendment, their attorney has told them, could be used to indicate some kind of involvement or jurisdiction or authority of the PUC in a particular law, a particular suit. And I suggest that, Learned and High Counsel, that if after the word act on line 13 the word act, you put a period, and you deleted if the action or proceeding concerns the authority of the Public Utility Commission to regulate or establish extended area service rates or unincorporated associations or corporative corporations, would perhaps more clearly satisfy the parties. Both parties on the record said that would make them comfortable that, in effect, the lawsuit that's pending would not be affected in any way by the amendments or the bill. So do you have a good opinion on that, counsel?
Mr. Chair, Senator Courtney, we did talk a bit with Senator Metzger in the hall about what you just described, and while I think it would be my official duty to discourage you from making a conceptual amendment, I don't think that you would do any harm by dropping that language and passing the bill. It would broaden that clause to so that we do not affect any action that's already commenced.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Council.
And the reason, you know, this committee meets rarely, and we won't meet again after 2 weeks, and so the timing is kind of important. You know, let me take it one step further. If you look at line 6, everyone agrees they would like to delete the two established. Now, are we pushing our luck?
Establish or, Mr.
Excuse me, to establish or.
Mr. Chair, frankly, I guess I would probably like to hear from someone from PUC on that issue, but it would be my guess that, in fact, PUC doesn't establish the rates. They do, in fact, probably approve a rate that's proposed by the...
Yeah, PUC agrees.
They're nodding.
All the parties.
I knew in the room it was, but...
Yeah, the parties,
one another one.
I guess, Mr. Connie, the question I'm having... And we really try to abide by the conceptual amendment concept. We've been very good about that. But because of the timing, and I understand in Section 2 why we're doing that, and I just wonder if you thought we were pushing our luck if we were to try to do the same thing with that line 6 and delete those with that. Do we have your blessing?
With that nod that I didn't see but I hear has occurred, I'm going to say yes.
Okay, thank you. Is there anyone else who wants to testify or any other comments or any questions for them? If not, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2727, and I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 2727. Senator Metzger.
Mr. Chairman, I just move we suspend the rules for the purpose of conceptual amendments.
Wait a minute. We only do that. Right. You're going to start with Amendment 1, aren't you, Senator Metzger?
Well, I thought you could start with them. I was just suspending the rules.
Actually,
we could do that.
4 takes care of everything.
Oh, I'm sorry. I did not know that. He needs to do what he's got to do then.
Yes.
I suppose we suspend the rules for the purpose of considering conceptual amendments.
Senator Metzger moves that we suspend the rules for this consideration of the amendments for 2727. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? The rules are suspended. Senator Courtney.
Mr. Chair, I move that we conceptually amend the -4 amendments to HB 2727 on line 6 by eliminating the words to establish or. Wait a minute.
No, establish.
Establish.
Excuse me.
Two words.
Establish or by deleting the words establish or on line 6 and on line 13 following the word act insert a period and delete if the action or proceeding concerns the authority of the Public Utility Commission to regulate or establish extended area service rates of unincorporated associations or cooperative corporations.
You've heard the amendment to the -4 that would, the conceptual amendment would delete on line 6 the words establish or, and beginning on line 13 after the word act, there would be a period, and everything after that would be deleted. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, so ordered.
Mr. Chair, I move that the -4 amendment as amended I move the -4 amendment as amended.
Senator,
House Bill 2727.
Okay, Senator Courtney moves the -4 amendments as amended. Is there any question? Any discussion? Any objections? Ordered.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2724 as amended to the Senate floor.
2727.
Courtney. I move House Bill 2727 has amended to the House floor, the Senate floor, the DuPage recommendation, Jason.
Senator Courtney moves House Bill 2727 as amended to the floor with a DuPage recommendation. Is there any discussion? Hearing none. So ordered. Oh, excuse me. Is there any objection? Hearing none. So ordered. Carrier of the bill.
I'd like to carry it, Mr. Chair. Oh, this Senator, is from my district.
Senator Metzger would like to carry it. Thank you very much, Senator Atkinson. We know we're making you late to your next meeting. The work session on House Bill 2727 is concluded, and we are adjourned. And thank you for all the parties working together so well today. We got some good work done.
We did, Mr. Chair.
Thank you for your